All right, so get ready, because today we're diving deep into a case that really makes you think about conspiracy law.
Oh, yeah. This one's a doozy.
We're going all the way back to 1985, California. We've got a guy named David Wayne Sconce.
I've heard of this one.
Now, this guy's already in trouble. Some shady stuff happening at his funeral home.
Oh.
But it gets even more interesting when he's also accused of conspiring to murder a guy, Elias Stephan.
Oh, wow. Okay, so we're talking conspiracy to commit murder now.
Exactly. And that brings us to the big question we're tackling in this deep dive. Can you actually, like, undo a conspiracy, you know, after you've already agreed to be a part of it?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? The whole idea of withdrawal from a conspiracy. It's crucial, you know, in criminal law, but people don't always get it.
Right.
And this case, People v. Sconce, really digs into that. It said a precedent could affect tons of other cases.
Absolutely. And we've got a lot to unpack. We've got court documents, legal analyses, even some what-if scenarios to really, like, get into the weeds on this one.
Love it.
So first things first, what exactly was Sconce accused of doing?
Okay, so the prosecution, they alleged that Sconce offered money to someone to get rid of Estefan.
Wow.
And he even roped other people into it. Like, there was talk of a hitman. They even drove by Estefan's house, like the whole casing the joint thing.
So, like, they were actually taking steps to make this happen.
Exactly. These weren't just empty threats, you know? They were considered overt acts, meaning actions taken to actually move the conspiracy forward.
Okay, so this was more than just talk. But this is where it gets tricky, right? Because Sconce eventually calls the whole thing off. He tells his co-conspirators to back down.
Right.
And the initial trial court judge actually saw this as him successfully withdrawing from the conspiracy.
Interesting.
So why was that initial ruling so important? What did it mean?
Well, it kind of implied that you could, like, get a get out of jail free card even after you've, you know, taken concrete steps to commit a crime.
Right.
It raised a big question, you know, can you just hit the brakes on a conspiracy and pretend it never happened?
You're like, just psych. Never mind. I changed my mind.
Exactly.
Okay, so the judge says one thing, but it feels like, you know, instinctively, once you've agreed to a criminal plan and things are in motion,
yeah,
you can't just magically undo it. That's where the appeal comes in, right?
Exactly. The prosecution pushed back on that initial ruling hard.
Of course.
They appealed because, legally speaking, you know, withdrawing from a conspiracy in California, it doesn't mean you're off the hook for the crime of conspiracy itself.
Right.
Especially once those overt acts, like we talked about, have taken place.
So even if Sconce changed his mind, the agreement to conspire and those initial actions, it's still there. He couldn't just erase his involvement.
Yeah, it's subtle, but it's a crucial point. Withdrawing, it might protect you from being liable for, you know, things that happen after you back out, but it doesn't wipe away your responsibility for that initial agreement.
Right.
And those first steps you took to put the plan in motion.
Okay, so California law lays out the rules, but how did the court apply that to Sconce's specific case?
Well, they looked at those overt acts we talked about, the offering money, scoping out the victim's house, and they said, nope, the conspiracy was already a done deal at that point. Even if Sconce got cold feet later, he was still responsible.
So, nice try, but not enough to escape the consequences. This brings up some interesting what-if scenarios, right? Like, what if, instead of just telling his buddies to stand down, Sconce went to the police?
Right.
Would that have changed things? That's a really good question, right? Going to the police seems like it should count for something.
Right. You'd think that would show you really want to stop things.
Exactly, yeah.
But, well, the law can be pretty tricky, and the court actually addressed that kind of scenario in this case. Informing the authorities, it might show you've changed your mind, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're taking concrete steps, you know, to actually stop the conspiracy.
So it's not enough to just, like, blow the whistle. You actually have to take action, actually try and dismantle the whole conspiracy.
You got it. That's a key takeaway from People v. Sconce, withdrawing. It's not just about getting yourself out of trouble. It's about actively working to defeat the whole purpose of the conspiracy. You're really trying to stop it from happening.
Okay, so going to the police might not be enough. What if Sconce, what if he had only told one of his co-conspirators that he was out? Would that have been enough?
Nope, not according to the court. They were very clear, to be valid, the withdrawal has to be communicated to everybody involved. All of them.
Oh, wow.
It can't be like this secret thing where you tell one person one thing but leave everyone else in the dark.
So no sneaky side deals when it comes to withdrawing from a conspiracy. Everyone's got to be in the loop.
Absolutely. And it makes sense if you think about it, right? If you only tell one person the conspiracy, it could still keep going without you.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're potentially on the hook for whatever happens next, even if you thought you were out.
Yeah, I see what you mean. This really makes me think about how tough it must be for lawyers who have clients involved in conspiracies.
Oh.
I mean, imagine your client comes to you and the conspiracy is already happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's already in motion. Knowing how hard it is to prove withdrawal, what do you even tell them?
Yeah, that's a really complex issue for sure. It's a real ethical tightrope for lawyers. You know, you have to represent your client, do what's best for them, but you also have to uphold the law. It's a tough balancing act.
It really is. It's like, do you tell your client to try and dismantle the conspiracy? But then they might incriminate themselves even more,
mm-hmm.
you know? Or do you just try to do damage control?
That is the million-dollar question. In this case, People v. Sconce, it definitely makes those strategic decisions even harder because withdrawal is just so hard to prove.
Right. So it sounds like this case really throws a wrench into that whole idea of I'm out. When it comes to conspiracy, it's a lot more complicated than people probably realize.
You got it.
But what about the lasting impact of this case? How did People v. Sconce change legal thinking about conspiracy in California?
Oh, this case had huge ripple effects. It really clarified the requirements for proving you've withdrawn, made it a lot tougher to use as a defense. And this isn't just some abstract legal theory. You know, it has real-world consequences for lawyers and defendants in similar cases.
So People v. Sconce really raised the bar, made it much harder to claim you've successfully withdrawn from a conspiracy.
Yeah.
But there's another layer to this, right? This case also looked at the communication aspect of withdrawal.
Right. It's not enough to just say, I'm out. You have to communicate that withdrawal clearly and definitely to everyone involved. You have to be transparent, make sure everyone's on the same page.
So it's almost like you're trying to dismantle the agreement itself, not just your own role in it.
Yeah, exactly. And that was a big point the court made in this case. They wanted to make sure withdrawing from a conspiracy wasn't just about individual accountability. You know, it was about actually dismantling the whole criminal enterprise, like taking it apart.
So what we're learning here is that conspiracy law isn't just about what one person does.
Right.
It's about understanding the dynamics of the whole group, how those dynamics influence, you know, how a conspiracy forms and how you take it apart.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that makes conspiracy law so fascinating and so complex, you know. It makes you think about not just the individual's intent, but the intent of the whole group, everybody.
Yeah, that's a good point. This case really makes you think about the nature of agreement. When does just talking become something more? When does knowing about a crime make you part of it?
Big questions, right? That gets at the heart of what it means to be part of a conspiracy.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground today, but I feel like we've only scratched the surface of this case.
Oh, for sure.
There's still so much to unpack, so many what ifs.
It's a case that keeps on giving, really. Layers of legal and ethical complexity. A case that every lawyer, especially the ones practicing criminal law, should really study.
I totally agree. We'll be back in a moment to wrap up our deep dive into People v. Sconce and talk about how it changed the law.
Okay, so we're back. And I gotta say, this whole Sconce case really makes you think about the bigger picture.
Yeah, it really does. It's like you fall down a rabbit hole with conspiracy law.
Yeah.
And one of the things this case highlights, People v. Sconce, is that the law, it's not just about, you know, punishing bad stuff. It's also about trying to get people to do the right thing, even when they're already, you know, in a mess.
I see what you mean. So by making withdrawal so difficult, like, is the law saying it's better to just, you know, avoid getting involved in a conspiracy in the first place?
Yeah, you could definitely see it that way. It's like a warning, right? The law is saying, think carefully before you agree to anything illegal, because once it's in motion, it's almost impossible to back out.
Right. It's like a cautionary tale. But let's go back to People v. Sconce for a second. We talked about how it impacts lawyers, how they think about strategy and stuff. But what about, like, the bigger picture? How does this case change how we think about conspiracy in general? Well, one of the big things that came out of this case is that it kind of blurred the lines between thought and action.
Mm.
Like we're saying, when does knowing about a crime turn into actually being a part of it? When does talking about something illegal actually become committing a crime?
That's a great question. And those overt acts, like we talked about, they seem to be a big part of that, right?
Totally. Those overt acts, that's the dividing line. It's not just about the agreement, you know?
Yeah.
It's about actually doing something, taking steps to show that it's not just talk.
Right. It's going from thought to action. So People v. Sconce made the courts really deal with that question, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And it shows us that the law is always changing, trying to keep up with how complicated people are.
Well, I think we can all agree we've learned a lot from our deep dive into this case, People v. Scons. It really gets you thinking about all the little details of a law and the tricky balance between individual responsibility and how, like, a group can be involved in criminal activity.
For sure. And I hope our listeners have a better understanding of just how complicated and how interesting, you know, conspiracy law really is.
I think so, too. So until next time, everyone, remember, think before you conspire. And if you find yourself in over your head, maybe call a lawyer. Thanks for joining us.